You know, Myron, for today's Spirit in Action program, I'm going to be interviewing a woman who's talking about black girls and their problems with education. And her belief is that education is the best insulator against so many of the horrible things that happen. But we've criminalized a lot of the non-criminal behavior of students so that they end up missing out on their educational opportunities. Now, you served as a teacher for 34 years, so you're well aware of students and what makes for success or doesn't. Could you give me an overview of the history of education in the United States and particularly how it's dealt with minorities?
The beginning of American public school education usually dates back to the Massachusetts Public School Law of 1647. In that law, the people of Massachusetts decided that any town of 50 families needed to have a teacher and any town of 100 families needed to have a grammar school. That is the beginning. It worked in fits and starts throughout the growth of our country and developed pretty well in the New England colonies. The Kalamazoo case in the 1870s was a state Supreme Court case that set the precedent that taxes could be collected for public education, that it was a public good. It was the benefit to all of society to have children in school. And I think a third of the major cases is Brown v. Board in 1954, saying that you can have school for everybody. And you know, we have a long tradition here of trying to educate everybody. I always like to point out that in the first day of school, the principal stand on the schoolhouse steps and open the door to everybody. It doesn't matter race, creed, color, sexual orientation, gender, if you can walk, talk, eat, whatever the physical disability is, you are all welcome in the great American public school system. And that's a point of pride, and we should remember that and continue that.
And what about the actual access to schools for minorities? Have they been treated the same, disadvantaged? How has that worked?
Well, for much of our history, it's been pretty brutal. The separation of schools based on race meant that poor schools, poverty, didn't have very many services, books, teachers, etc. And the Brown decision in 1954 was supposed to help solve that, and effectively did. It just took a long time to break those historical prejudices. Today, the number one indicator of success in school is the lack of poverty. If we factor out poverty, our students compete with students all over the world. So when we talk about school reform, I always think that the number one issue that we need to reform is poverty. Students who come to school happy, healthy, and well-fed do well, and that is the number one reform. And when you talk about schools being militarized and so on, that tends to be something that you see in what we would call poor schools or schools with a lot of poverty. And that is, poverty is equated with violence, and that's too bad.
With poverty being the number one indicator of possible success in the school, it would seem that we'd be looking at poverty to see what's happening and predicting the future for the USA. There's a graphic that you use on your congressional campaign handout, which shows 2003-04 versus 2013-14 and what's happening with respect to poverty. What's your prediction about how things are going to go for schools in the United States?
Well, here in Wisconsin, we're rapidly moving towards a time when we will have 50% of our public school population receiving either free or reduced lunches because their family's income is so low. That is not a good indicator. Schools can only do so much. As I said earlier, when you have a room full of healthy, happy, and well-fed students, teaching is much, much easier than those who have worked until the wee hours of the night or come to school and wonder where their next meal is going to be coming from. So I always think that the number one way to improve schools is to decrease the level of poverty. The militarization of our schools is frequently in the poorer schools. The equation of equating poverty to violence and then to punish the students who are unruly. I've taught in three different schools in my career. One very small rural school of 120 students in grades 1 through 12, and then a more urban school of 400 students in grade 7 through 12, and then a very urban school of almost 2,000 students in grades 9 through 12. The problems that I saw in all three places were about the same. The numbers, of course, increased. But the people that, as I said earlier, healthy, happy, and well-fed, they do very well regardless of the size of the school and the amount of students.